This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Harry's. Stop messing around and get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your free trial offer. $13 value for free, just covered the shipping by going to harrys.com/whatthetech. Hover. Find a domain name for your idea. Go to hover.com/WTT and get 10% off your first purchase. Again, that's hover.com/WTT. Hover, domain names for your ideas. And by FreshBooks. For a 30-day free trial, go to freshbooks.com/WTT and enter in What the Tech in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
What the Tech?
Hey everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by the one, the only Mr. Paul Thurrott. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. You were traveling. You were in Canada.
Yep.
You were in Montreal, correct? Did you? Where did you go?
We went to Montreal. And we went to Stobermont as well.
Oh, nice. Nice little trip. Did you enjoy it? You drove, right?
Yep.
It was fine.
We're actually driving tomorrow to Pennsylvania too, because apparently I don't get enough of my car. So
oh my god. Hooray. You're going the opposite way now.
Yep.
Well, you should wave when you're driving by.
I will. I'll beep the horn.
Beep the horn. You could hear my dog barking. That's exactly what you could do. I do have so much to ask you, because you have the S8, you have the Moto G5. There's a lot of other things happening. I want to talk about all of this with you, because it's all very, very interesting stuff. I know a lot of people are very curious to know what your opinion is of the S8. So am I, because I have an S7 here that I need to get rid of desperately, because it's pretty broken.
Because of that bezel. My God, what is it, 1979?
Well, no. It does have a much more of a bezel. Look at that. And it's gold. So we'll talk about that.
Actually, gold, I don't mind. Anyway. Okay.
We'll talk about all of that. Before we do, let's talk about our sponsor, and that's Harry's. Get your free trial set, including a razor handle, 5-blade cartridge, and shaving gel. Go to harrys.com/whatthetech. I've been using a Harry's razor for a long, long time, and we've mentioned it many times on the show. Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys. This is the story, the guys that came up with this. Two ordinary guys who are fed up with getting ripped off. Started Harry's to fix shaving. When you go to the store and you have to buy a nice blade, I'm not talking about these disposable crappy blades. I'm talking about, you know, something decent, something a little pricey. They're gonna lock this thing away, treat you like a criminal. You got to wait for some guy to come with a key because they're afraid you're going to steal it. With Harry's, you don't have any of that. No hassle. Delivered to your door, very affordable, way more than some of those other guys. It's absolutely great. Harry's is so confident that you're going to love their blades. They're going to give you a trial set for free. Just cover the shipping of $3, which is unbelievable. Go to harrys.com/whatthetech. Get your free trial set, including a razor handle, 5 blades, cartridge, and the shave gel. Paul, you use a Harry's razor. I use a Harry's razor. And a lot of our audience uses a Harry's razor. By the way, Father's Day is coming up. You know, I'm bringing this up because I do this every year. For one of my relatives or a couple of my relatives, I always give them a Harry's razor. Christmas, holiday, makes my life so much easier. Just send them a Harry's razor. Harrys.com/whatthetech. I'm going to thank them for supporting the show. Paul, let's start off with your experience with the S8.
Andrew, we only have a little time, so it's going to be tough. This is strange. Like, there's a lot going on with this device. And I've owned Samsung devices, but it's been a while. And I know Samsung is dinged a lot for putting a bunch of crap on top of Android. I know that they've calmed it down. But the thing is, there's a lot of Samsung crap on this phone. And I shouldn't say crap. I should say there's a lot of Samsung customization on the phone, not all of which is bad. In fact, most of it's not horrible. But there's a lot of Samsung stuff, you know?
Yeah.
There are things that are specific to the device, like the edge controls and so forth. There are things that are specific to Amazon, like the Bixby personal assistant. Their custom look and feel and all that, obviously. but this like Samsung service is going on here. There's all this like it's very involved. There's lots of little things. Like there's little animations, you know, like on the lock screen now, and I see this on the home screen as well.
Yeah.
There's like a star field that kind of rotates as you move the phone around, you know, like when you pick it up, the star field kind of, you know, animates with the phone. It gives it kind of a neat fluid effect. And of course, there's just the basic design of this thing, which is, I think, is a revelation in a way. I mean, aside from the weird mistakes that Samsung made with this, like the stupid, you know, what do you call it? The fingerprint reader or whatever being right next to the camera on the back, which is just
okay. So insanity. I hate that. I hate that. And it seems like everybody's going that direction. And so is the next.
Well,
iPhone.
No. Don't misunderstand what I mean by this. Like, honestly, fingerprint readers in the back are not horrible. Don't have to be horrible. So here, this is the Pixel, which in many ways is only an okay phone, but see where it is. Like it's in the right place.
It's not by the camera.
It's not by the camera, but more important, when I hold this phone naturally, my finger goes right to that. It's very simple.
So is the camera in the same spot?
Oh, it's in exactly the same spot. So okay. Here's the problem. This thing is much taller than other phones, right? Oh, all the time. So you can see where my finger is down here. It's a good inch and a half below where the fingerprint sensor is. This is where it should be. If the fingerprint reader was where it should be, A, it would be easy to reach, and B, you would never touch the camera. But because it's kind of hard to see on the screen there, but it's a very I'm on the wrong side. It's a very small, comparatively small sensor next to the camera. The camera doesn't have a lot of differentiation either, and so I know some people will be happy because it's kind of flushed with the body. Frankly, I've never cared about that in the slightest. But the problem is because there's no camera bump at all, it's very easy, you know, to slip over and smudge the camera, which people are going to do every single day. There's no doubt about it. Samsung, like Microsoft, of course, provides multiple ways to do different things too, which is kind of goofy. So off the top of my head, it supports obviously PIN and all the, you know, the patterns and all the other kinds of way you can sign in on Android. It supports the fingerprint reader on the back. It has an iris scanner, which is...
Does it work?
I've not tried yet. I haven't tried. I normally hate these kinds of things. But it also does facial recognition, right? And the facial recognition is really unsafe. You could put a picture of yourself in front of it and it would unlock the phone.
Does it do so, it? Did you try that?
I haven't. No, I've not tried this either.
Yeah.
I'm just, there's a lot. I guess my point is there's just a lot. Like I just got this thing, right? And it's not the only thing that's going on today. Plus I'm only home for 24 hours and we're leaving and I have stuff to do. Like, so... It's a really busy time, you know, A. And then B, there's just so much going on the phone. Like, it's crazy. Like, even there's, like, weird things. Like, so, for example, like, on most phones, the home – well, actually, that's not true. On some phones, the home button, the fingerprint reader doubles as a home button, right? On some phones, like the Pixel, it does not. They're two different things.
Yeah.
On some phones, you can configure it either way. The fingerprint reader could be a home button or it can't be a home button. You can do it either way. This one, it's not a home button. It wouldn't make sense for it to be one because of its position on the back. But there's a virtual home button that you kind of pushes, you know, well, it doesn't push it, but it's a virtual one in the glass. By default, you can't unlock the phone with it, but you can configure the phone to unlock that way. So I don't know if that bypasses security yet. I haven't really tested it a lot. Yeah. Like, for example, right now I just opened the phone using that virtual button somehow, and I guess it hasn't completely locked or something. I have no idea. But seriously, that's the problem. There's so much going on here.
So here's the thing.
It's hard to even quantify this thing.
I have an S6 and I have an S7, right? So I went down the line. For me, it was not that big of an improvement, right? Like, it was a gradual improvement from the S6 to the S7. And the only reason why I really enjoyed the S7 is because it was a curved display, and I made the mistake of not getting the curved display. It really changes the entire concept of the phone. Yep. The non-curved is... I don't even know why I got the non-curved, to be honest. I went with the curve on this one, and it's great. But it wasn't a tremendous improvement. I personally... like the touch that Samsung puts on this. I know people that had the S5 and they absolutely hated it because it was too Samsung-ized.
Well, the S5 was terrible.
It was terrible.
They've gotten much better. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, I agree with that.
As far as the UI goes, the Samsung UI, forget about like, you know, the iris scanner and the this and the that. Mm-hmm. What do
like
you think of the overall?
Used to be touchless.
Yeah. What do you think of the overall UI? Because you are a fan of the plain Google experience or plain Android experience, and this is very different. You know, there's a lot of different things happening.
Yeah. It's interesting because Google has itself fragmented what the notion of a clean Android UI is, right? So on the Pixel, they actually offer some UI elements that are not found on otherwise clean versions of Android from other phone makers. It's just they're goofy, like, you know, well, I guess all these companies are goofy. They all kind of do this kind of goofy thing. So, for example, the Pixel has round icons where the rest of Android does not. Okay, fine. The OnePlus 3T, which we probably talked about last week, which I'm also reviewing, kind of a midline phone, has different themes, which, you know, like a lot of Android phone makers do. I've kind of ignored that stuff by and large. But one thing I found on the OnePlus 3T, for whatever reason, is that it's a mostly clean Android experience.
Yeah.
But they have a theme on there that it actually provides rounded icons.
Yeah. Oxygen. Yeah.
And I actually find it very nice. I find it to be very pleasing. Like, it's a nice, I like the look of it. And they actually change a lot of the icons. So icons for things like Amazon Kindle or Duolingo or the Google apps or whatever, they're a little different. They're round. They're not just like the same icon with a round circle around them. They're actually tailored a little bit to the theme. And normally I don't spend a lot of time with that kind of baloney, but I like it. So, you know, whatever. All right. So to answer your question, I guess with that as background, Samsung has its own style of icons, for example. They're not circles, right? And they're not standard round rectangles like you see on the iPhone.
By the way, you could change it. You could turn it off too if you want.
Okay. I'm just saying, you know, just the way it comes. Some of them aren't. I mean, some of them are, you know, like, well, I've installed apps too. I mean, like the Google apps are irregular shapes often, like the Play Store looks like a briefcase for some reason. Or maybe that's supposed to be a shopping bag. It doesn't matter.
I think it's is it a shopping bag? It might be, actually.
It's going to be a shopping bag. Whatever. It doesn't matter. You know, the Photos app is a pinwheel because photos and pinwheels make sense. It doesn't matter. The point is, I it's fine. You know, it's its own thing. You know, it seems like with Android, there are a lot of variations on the same themes. You know, so for example, if you want to go to the apps view on any one of these phones, like sometimes it's a button. Oftentimes it's a button. On the Pixel, and I think on the OnePlus 3T as well, like Android 7 is probably an Android 7 feature, you can kind of swipe up from the dock at the bottom to display the apps. On this phone, and I don't know if this is true on the S7, there is actually no button anywhere on here to see those apps. You actually swipe up from right above the dock. There's a lot of little tips to help you understand that that's what you're doing. And it's fine. You know, it's fine. It's a little different, but it's fine. They have folders, by the way, in the apps view. So for example, all of the Google apps are not out with all of the apps. They're in a Google folder like we usually see on the home screen. That's unusual, but it's also immediately obvious how it works. And it's like, okay, fine. It's fine. You know, they have Samsung Pay instead of Android Pay. They have, although they still have Android Pay. They have Bixby instead of Google Assistant, although they still have Google. you know, it's a little weird like that. They have their own messaging app, which honestly, I think the fonts are nice. So and are I had you to
using,
bump them up.
You're using the Samsung Messenger?
Yeah.
Okay. So I use the Verizon one, which the only reason why is, you know my crazy thing about it, I like to get my messages on my laptop. So. Sure. That's the only reason why I really use the messaging, the Verizon messaging app, which is terrible. But the Samsung one, when I used it for the short period of time that I did, I really enjoyed it. It was a decent messenger. It wasn't terrible.
Yeah. I mean, I guess in some ways, not just this phone, but the other phone experiences I've had over the past, you know, week, 10 days, whatever, have kind of opened me up a little bit more to this notion of alternative user experiences and icon
styles. Is that
like
alternative facts? Is that like alternative facts?
No, it's nothing like alternative facts.
Is that what we call when users are not happy with the service? We just called it an alternative user experience.
No, it's just whatever. I mean, I think this Samsung, I know that Samsung was a little heavy-handed in the past with their UIs. I think what they're trying to do here is create a more cohesive user experience across the phone. There's a consistency to the buttons, like the the row of navigation buttons on the bottom, and then the icons on the Samsung app, like phone and camera and messages, are styled the same way. It's kind of a minimalist theme. It's a little bit like a Metro was on Windows Phone, a little bit like the new iOS 7 Plus, you know, type UI. It's clean, you know?
Yeah.
So far, by the way, I've not run into an app that doesn't fill the screen. Now, I know they're out there, and I've only installed half a dozen or a dozen apps so far, but that's been very interesting. If you run the Google apps, stretch to fill the screen, they work great and they look great. The camera, I've done very limited testing, but it's amazing.
Okay, I was going to save that for the end of it. Is it the best camera you've used?
It's too early to say, but the cat was laying on the dryer as she does in the bathroom, and so I walked by and saw her in there, and I thought, well, I'll come up if I can. She looked kind of cute with little hands, you know, the way they sleep out on their back or whatever. And I thought if I don't disturb her, this might be a pretty good picture. And on the phone, I zoomed in, and you could see like all of the individual hairs coming off of her nose or whatever. Not the whiskers, but like the little hairs, like the little, you know, and it's impressive. You know, it's,
I'm curious at how much of a difference there will be between what I have, the S7, and yours.
Exactly.
That would be a nice comparison. You know what? We could do it on May 2nd, May 1st, when you're here for the meetup.
That's right. Speaking of which.
Is it not happening now?
No, it is.
At Rattle and Hum.
Yeah, I don't think I booked this yet. I gotta.
Uh-oh.
Let me just look at this.
I still have a way. I'll give you an example.
It's not next week, right?
So yesterday I went to the Mets game. You got 2 weeks. Yesterday I went to the Mets game. And you've been, a lot of our viewers, I mean, there's about 100 people in the chat room right now. And it's astonishing how critical, it's not one or two people that have an issue with the iPhone 7's camera, the iPhone 7 Plus's camera, right? It's not a couple of people. It's many, many people. And I have a decent eye for this stuff. I enjoy photography. I'm not a professional photographer, but I'm a hobby photographer. I have a DSLR. Yeah. You know, I do this because I enjoy it. Sure. And because my work phone is an iPhone 7 Plus and my regular phone is an S7 Edge, I get to do these really interesting comparisons on an everyday basis. So whenever I'm taking a photo, if I'm at an event, I'm at it's a low light area, or I'm taking a photo, I always want to see, compare them. It's not that the iPhone is worse. It's that it performs very differently than the Samsung. And in some scenarios, it does a better job. One being, if I am in a very well lit area, I took a photo last week and I posted it. We're doing this the series on bartending, and I took this beautiful photo of the producer and the videographer and the host, you know, sitting at the bar, and it's like this behind the scenes shot. And I have to tell you, it looked unbelievable because there were professional lights. I took the same photo with my S7 and it looked blown out. It did not perform well.
Right. That suggests that Apple only takes test photos with professional lighting.
But you know what, though? I'll tell you something. Those photo samples that they used during the iPhone event, saying like these were taken with the iPhone 7, wasn't a professional photographer. Yeah. They were taken with an iPhone 7 because it performed beautifully. That portrait mode is, I have to tell you, terrible. Very bad. Something that you've been saying for 7 months now, 6 months now. So in your opinion, is this better? For the short term that you've had, the S8, is it better than the iPhone 7 Plus as far as a camera goes?
I don't know. The issue for me is that the iPhone, you know, from the iPhone 5S on, the camera got better each time. And with the iPhone 7, it was the first time where the brakes kind of went on, you know, and it's a lot of things. The HDR is terrible and it doesn't seem to ever come on, and you can't leave it on. Other phones like the Pixel and some others support the OnePlus 3T does this, have an auto HDR mode, which actually works pretty well. But you can just leave HDR on. You know, if you want it to be more saturated because it's just not working out for you, you can leave HDR on. You can't do that with the iPhone. I find it to be incredibly aggravating. That portrait mode, which was so touted back at the launch event, is a joke. It's terrible. It's software-based bokeh, which makes no sense because the phone has hardware zoom capabilities, optical zoom capabilities, two cameras, you could, it would do incredible book. In fact, does all by itself. You don't need that stupid feature. It's terrible. It's still terrible. And the thing I've noticed is that, you know, when the the 7 and the 7 Plus came out last September, I already had a Nexus 6P, which had come out the previous year, which took way better low light photos than the iPhone 6S and then the 7 as well, but was a little slower. Like, one of the nice things about the iPhone is that the camera speed was always very quick and still is. And that's nice. It works very well.
Yeah.
Performance wise. But the iPhone 7 was a step back. It wasn't as good as the Nexus in any conditions. It was just faster. And then the Pixel came out, and the Pixel, I would actually, it's, you know, I'm doing this based on memory now because I don't have the 6P, but I said this at the time based on taking side-by-side photos like you're talking about. The Nexus 6P actually took better photos than the Pixel, but the Pixel's close, and it's very, very good. It's better than the iPhone, much better. And you saw some of those low-light photos I took.
I did,
on this most recent trip, right? That one of the drink in the bar very closely resembled a picture you took with the S7, right? Of a drink in a bar. And it just, there's just something about these cameras that really do well in those situations. So I've not taken any low light photos with this. It's not sunny out today, so I didn't run out to take pictures of plants and stuff like I typically do with any phone. I've only taken a handful. I took an incredibly goofy picture, which will never see the light of day, of me in a selfie photo, because it does Snapchat style, like bunny filters, ears and whiskers and stuff. So
adorable.
I did that literally just to show my daughter, so she could never unsee that and would be mentally harmed by it for the rest of her life.
Sure.
But anyway, just taking that one picture of the cat, and I've taken more than that one picture, I should say. But you know, I can look at it now, and it wouldn't make sense for me to hold it up so you could see this. But the detail on the hair, it does eventually blow out. I mean, at some point, it's funny that you can zoom it in this far. Eventually, you can see, if not the pixels, then at least the fact that they're blobby,
where it's areas, falling apart. You know,
The hairs, you know, and so forth. But you know, on various parts of the cat's body, the individual hairs and the little colors of the hairs, they're very distinct, and it's very lifelike. I mean, it's really amazing.
It is amazing how the technology. I mean, even. You know, I honestly think that the 4S was the first major shift as far as decent photography went with the phone, right? I would say the 4S was...
I think that's correct, yeah.
Right? I would, because I had a 4. My wife had a 4, and then she had a 4S, and it was so different.
I think the 4S, the big leap there was, in fact, photography. Oh, and the antenna worked.
The antenna worked, yeah. The antenna worked on
that. It was that little addition. They just threw that in.
It did the thing that a phone is supposed to do with that one. I love it. Yeah. I think that was the first leap. And now we're in this gradual thing. The biggest disappointment for me, and I think that we're going to see this now. We're starting to see it. And I think the next generation of photography, maybe not the S8, maybe the S9 or whatever, or the next iPhone. Mm-hmm. But when we talk about, you know, the portrait mode with the iPhone, where it does the aperture, where it blurs the back a little bit, it's going to have to rely on hardware. It's going to have to, not software. I think it's
thing. I don't know why they have a
second camera on here. What they should do is do a double photo, blur it, and then combine it.
Well,
that is what they do. That is, but it's relying more on the software side than anything.
This, you know, the one aside from the fingerprint reader on the back, I think the one major negative, which I see, and I'm looking at the camera app now because we're talking about it, a lot of this stuff is so overloaded with functionality.
Oh, are you in the settings menu?
I'm just looking at the camera app, and so, for example, aside from the buttons you can see on screen, which are
slide
obvious,
left or
you,
right,
you can. You can slide from any angle to do different things.
So is that
up, down, left, right? Yeah, well, but depending on which way you slide, you'll see something different. Every one of those does something different. You can slide on the shutter button to zoom. So instead of scrolling on, I think that's what it does. Yes.
I don't have
it's making. Oh, I probably just took 40 photos, didn't I? God damn it.
You did.
I was like, it's making a weird machine gun sound. Oh, I just took 43 photos. That's
are you shooting 16:9 or are you shooting 4:3?
No, I'm just doing 4:3 for now. I want to look at the maximum res. It will actually do, in addition to 16:9, which is very common, I should say, except on an iPhone. It will also do whatever the native resolution of the or native aspect ratio of the phone is, and so that results in kind of a panoramic, you know, super widescreen thing.
It also shoots in RAW, save RAW or JPEG. Yeah,
sure.
So there's a lot going on, but I mean, and again, it's good and bad, right? It's a very typical kind of Samsung-y thing that it's very powerful, you know, but it's also like, oh, geez, guys, like seriously. And I literally have to delete 43 images now to make that.
Sorry. While sure Paul does that, while Paul deletes all those photos, and we continue this discussion because there's a lot more to talk about. I want to talk about our sponsor, and that's Hover.com. Buying a domain name should be a simple process. I talk about this all the time. I've been buying domain names for many, many years now. I've sold a couple domain names, actually. My wife had started a business a couple years ago, and I bought my domain on Hover, her domain, and she ended up not really doing much with it. It was her and a friend. They started this business. It was this education resource and didn't go exactly the way that she wanted. And she had spent some money on this business. And, you know, she said, let's not renew the website. I said, you know what? Let's hang on to the website because I look at it as real estate on the web, right? I had an offer a couple months after that to buy the website, and I sold it for a couple $1,000s, surprisingly. Now, this isn't what we're doing here with Hover, but I'm just telling you, I do it as... You never know. You know, I buy my name. I buy 50 different ones for GFQ for reasons, you know, much like any other business would do. But a lot of people want to have their personal websites. They want to have their business. They want to have it for their kids or their grandparents, something. With Hover, they make the process super, super easy. Go to hover.com/WTT. You get 10% off your first purchase at Hover. And they pride themselves on not upselling you with the nonsense that some of those other guys do. You know the process already. You click on the domain name that you want to buy, and then they go through, do you want to do business registration? Do you want to do private registration? Do you want to get an email? Do you want, insurance? Paul, do you want to insure your domain name for $3,000 just in case there's a travesty? Some of these websites try to upsell you. You know, you may start off at a couple bucks, and by the time you're checking out, you're at $20, $30, $40, $50 for a domain name, and you don't even know what happened. With Hover, no upsell. You buy, private registrations included, so your information does not go out to the world. They make it very easy. And the other thing that I really love about them is their customer service. More than anything else, they make it very easy, very quick. You're not sitting on hold for hours. They're very friendly, and they have a live chat support, which I did. I transferred a domain name, Paul, to Leah Laporte recently.
Yes, that's right.
I think we did it on the show where we were buying domain names. I'm like, I'm going to buy this domain name. And I contacted them. I wasn't looking to buy it and hold on to it, but I contacted them. I told them it's with Hover. They also had a Hover account. They transferred it like this. Super easy. Hover.com/WTT. Get 10% off your first purchase. I want to thank Hover for supporting the show. I really, really enjoy those guys. They're very good people. And they're in Canada, Paul. Someplace you were.
Nice.
I don't know if that makes a difference for you. I buy Canadian. So the S8 overall, you thumbs up or thumbs down so far?
I mean, I just got it.
So far, I know. First time. I want to know
It seems great to me. I mean, I one of the things I'm kind of concerned about these days is the cost of stuff and how, and not these days, but, you know, this triggered some introspection about the cost of things. Because this is an expensive device. I got the bigger one, the S Plus. It was $850 plus, you know, shipping or whatever. It's not a non-considerable purchase or whatever, but the question is whether there's enough here to justify the cost difference between this and like a mid-level device like the OnePlus 3T. I have a big issue with the fact that, for example, the Pixel, which is just as expensive as this, performs less well than the OnePlus 3T does. And I sent you some benchmarks that proved what I've been saying all along, which is that this thing isn't as fast. And I find that kind of bizarre. On the iPhone side, and you're seeing this now, it's not so much, you know, iPhones have certain advantages over Android phones, period. But when you compare it to previous generation devices and the amount of money you have to spend to get a brand new device, would someone be better off with an iPhone 6 or an iPhone 6S or even an iPhone SE? Yeah, I mean, those phones today are much better values than the 7 Plus. It's just too expensive for what it is. And the fact that some of it's a step down. And so when you look at this thing, you have to kind of look at it in the same vein. And I have to say, the one thing that's really interesting about this is this new design where the bezel, where it's essentially bezel-less. I mean, obviously there's a bezel, but it's a kind of an edge-to-edge display. And I don't know how well you can kind of see this, but there's like no bezel there. When you basically, right? When you compare that to something like this, which is, let me just turn off the screen so it doesn't tediously turn off the screen. Fuck Christ's sakes. Sorry. As is always the case at 2:30, every single thing I have starts warning me.
Starts buzzing about your meeting.
Yeah. This, fricks. I can't. Anyway, this thing, the white one, if you look at the chin and the forehead on that, that look, I think that the Samsung is going to make that old-fashioned looking for everybody. And I think that this phone is going to change smartphone design permanently going forward. It's kind of like the low bezel displays on Ultrabooks that we saw first on the Dell XPS. We see it now everywhere. In fact, the ThinkPad I'm reviewing now has that kind of display where it's basically edgeless. It kind of makes a big difference. And I'm looking at them side by side now, and I've always thought the iPhone was a handsome device. I did ding Apple for using the same basic design 3 years in a row. They had never done that before. Had they ever done that before? Well, they started it before, but, and now it looks even worse. I mean, this has changed the equation, right? So there are things about this device that are not great, like the fingerprint reader. I'm sure they'll fix that on the Note 8 and then again on the S9 or whatever. But overall, like just from a design perspective, they're clearly, they've changed it. It's whether or not this exact device is a huge success. I think it will be, frankly, but, or works for me personally or whatever. This has changed the face of smartphones forever. I think.
Absolutely. This edge to edge and the bent edge display, you know, the curved edge displays is really going to be the future of these. The only thing, Paul, if you're going to make this your everyday phone, I'm going to give you a little piece of advice.
Please do.
I highly, highly recommend, okay, getting a glass screen protector for this thing. They're not cheap yet. I don't even know if the
screen protector.
Do you have one? A glass one, not a plastic one, a glass one, because of the way that the edge works, right? The curved display.
Yeah.
Putting like, I put a regular case on my phone, right? I don't do these crazy OtterBox things like this is the iPhone.
Okay. Yep.
So I put like regular case on this, regular plastic case on this, just to protect from scratches. When you drop the curved display, this edge will never catch. So if I could show you, if you drop it, the corner here will never catch it. It'll always fall right on the corner, and it will always shatter the glass.
Yeah.
I learned that the hard way, I've dropped this 3 times, and it shattered the glass. The only reason why I didn't have the glass on there, the protector, it didn't exist at that point when I got the phone.
Well,
it was very late to market.
When I ordered this, I went to order a case immediately from Samsung, and they were on. It was like a pre-order situation, and so at the time I thought, well, maybe I'll just buy one in a store the day it comes out or whatever. Now, of course, since then we're traveling, and it's possible that I'm going to go to like a Best Buy tomorrow. Well, actually, be Saturday in Pennsylvania and try to find a case because I have to get something.
Yeah, you got to get something for it.
I have since pre-ordered a case from Samsung, but it's
need two things, right? You want just like the thin plastic thing, right? That goes on the back. Like you want like the really, really thin one. Like, well, this is the iPhone, so it's on this.
Yeah.
But you also want the glass.
Yeah.
Let me see. Glass. Right.
So I've never protected a screen before, ever. And I don't like flip cases, right? That's a big thing in the Samsung world. They've made those cases that do stuff when they're closed and all that kind
of, well, I have the I wallet. I have one of these. It's a wallet.
That kind of thing. Yeah. I just don't like that kind of thing personally. This the problem is this thing's a bar of soap. You know,
yeah, I know, it's very slippery.
it's smudgy too. Like the, you know, if you don't like your phone to be all dirty, I can't really, I'm sure this would never show, but the, it, yeah, there's no way I can really show it.
Yeah.
To, but
yeah, same, that same thing on this smudges. One too. Yeah. Same thing on this
super
one.
Super smudgy. Right. Yeah. So. I like on the iPhone, they have these beautiful leather cases. I find these to be very nice. And actually in the seven generation, they have hard plastic buttons, which is a first. These are actually really nice. They don't really, I'd love to have this exact case, but for the Samsung, you know.
Here, I'll send you a link here. It's actually, with this time, these are readily available, which is a really, really good sign. Before, when I got the S7, these were not available. Let's see. I'm going to send you this link right now, so you could know. Like, this one's not bad, you know, and I'll put it in the chat room too. For people who are interested, if they have this phone, something like this would not be bad at all. So here is my question to you, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of the Moto G? This is what I wanted from you. You also got the Moto G recently.
Yeah. So I purchased three phones in the past, you know, a couple of weeks or whatever. So the Moto 3G is a low-end phone. So I'm now ordering this thing you sent me. Just excuse me one moment.
You got the Plus, right? You got the 8S Plus?
That's right.
S8 Plus, okay.
The Moto S, the Moto G, I guess it's like the Moto G5 or the, you know, fifth generation Moto G Plus, is a low-end phone. You could get it at Amazon for under $185. That version has lock screen ads and things like that, like you see in a Kindle. Sorry, I'm just making sure I'm buying the right thing here. So let me get that out of the way. The one I bought is a little more expensive. I paid more to get extra. It's like RAM and storage. And then, of course, it's expandable with micro SD storage, which, by the way, so is the Galaxy S8, which I really like. The one I got, actually, I'm gonna show it to you. It's over here. It's like I got the gold one. I got a gold iPhone because I had to, and then I ended up actually kind of liking it. So I don't know. It doesn't really
hold it on its side. Let me see what it looks like on the side. So this is how much? $200?
Yeah, the version I got was like $250, probably somewhere in there.
This is the unlocked version, Prime exclusive. Yep. With
this one I didn't offers. Get. I bought this directly from Motorola. This one is not the Prime exclusive one. Okay. But you could get this from them as well.
$239. It's micro. On Amazon.
There you go. So it's micro USB based, which is a little goofy to me in 2017, but it's a low end phone. Kind of a mid level. I don't remember the exact number, but Snapdragon 600 something processor. This one has 4 gigs of RAM. You can get it with two. This one has, I want to say 128 gigs of storage, I think. If not, it's 64, but it's either 32, 64, or 64, 128. I don't remember. You know, fingerprint reader on the front works great. 5.2-inch screen, I want to say, off the top of my head. It's, you know, the screen is not as nice as the other phones, right? There's no doubt about it. The OnePlus 3T and the Pixel when I was outside. This thing outside gets washed out so quick you can't see it. The phone quality is either on par with or not quite as good as that of the 3T, meaning it's not very good in the scope of typical iPhone cameras, the Samsung cameras, the Pixel or Nexus cameras. Those are all superior in some way. This is not like that, you know, but you know what? I mean, this kind of thing it represents an incredible value. Absolutely. At about $250, it's less than one third the cost of a Samsung Galaxy S8. It's almost one quarter the cost. Now they're not the same class of device. I mean, there's no doubt about it. In fact, if you wanted something that was a little more like a traditional chin, you know, kind of, you know, bumper type phone, a used S7 or a refurbished S7 or a new S7 even, whatever, would, you know, might be a better deal. A $400-something OnePlus 3T might be, in some ways, a better deal. But these phones, you know, not everyone can afford that. And they run all the Android stuff normally. It's a clean Android image. There's a couple little goofy Motorola bits in here, but honestly, I find them to be mostly pretty pleasant. And I've only had this one for a couple of days, so I'm going to do some testing with this one when we're in Pennsylvania as well, like I did last week with the other phone. But it's basically that clean Android experience we've been talking about. The performance seems fine. The cameras, it's fine. You know, it's only not fine because I've experienced like incredible smartphone cameras. I think for most people,
It's okay.
You know, if there are people walking around with used or, you know, old S3s even or S5s or whatever.
I know someone just got an S4. They just got an S4 because it was, it was like $80 or $90 or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah. This would be a much better deal.
So would you say it's better than the five, better than the Nexus 5X?
No.
Better deal? No?
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
Huh.
Yeah.
And that phone is
so the 5X compared to the 6P was basically the same camera, if I'm not mistaken. 6-core processor versus 8. Plastic body, but I thought it was attractive. Nice size screen, but modern componentry all around. That would be a good used phone, or not used necessarily, but if you could still find one new, and I'm sure the price would be lower. That would be a good deal. The OnePlus 3T, something to look at, but the Nexus is a much better camera than the OnePlus 3T. Hmm. And then I used even an S6, but at least an S7, not just a used one. You can go to eBay and buy them new, I think, for probably under $300 or in the $300 to $400 range, whatever that is. that'd be a great phone, with a great camera.
Yeah, I'm looking at how much it would be.
This is just hitting a price point, in the $200-ish range, it's fascinating to me that you can get this kind of... Remember, this is a metal body as well.
Not plastic, yeah.
The old Moto Gs were these tiny little plasticky things. They were colorful. They were kind of cute. You could pop off the backs and put different colors and they had little flip cases and things. And they were cute, but they were like kids' phones. Like, this is... No adult would ever be ashamed of carrying this, there's nothing wrong with this. This is a nice phone and it's a great value. It's just that if you really care about camera quality rather, and to me, it's almost the number one thing, frankly.
Yeah. I don't think most people realize it. I'm going to tell you something, Paul, and you'd be surprised. I see people walking, they have these giant cases on their phones and the case is all scratched up and they got the back protector on there. It's covering the camera and they're taking all these grainy photos and they have no idea. So I think for a lot of people, I think it's better. It's good enough, right?
Yeah.
It's a good enough phone, which listen, not everybody wants to spend all that money. I understand, and you shouldn't. I still stand by the fact that this is crazy how expensive these phones are. So it's overwhelming when you have to, you do the math and you realize you just paid $750 for something you're going to replace in a year and a half.
Yeah, right. I mean, there are certain devices that I use for years and years and years. And then there's some that seem to just kind of rotate out. And, Apple and other companies have made it easy to get on kind of a revolving system where you get an upgrade every year now. And if you don't mind being on that system, it's not such a bad way to go if you always want the new thing. But it's like this never-ending payment, The thing is, I don't know that there are many phones or many people who could, certainly people like technology enthusiasts, who would want to hold on to a phone past 2 years at this point, right? If you go back like with an iPhone, like 2 years ago, the new phone was an iPhone 6. And actually that would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
If you went back to an iPhone 5S or 5C, it's like now we're getting into a weird area,
I'd say that's where Windows Phone did well though, with these lower end devices. When we talk about how well someone just brought it up, the Go phones, the AT&T Go phones. I knew plenty of people that were walking around with, those 635s and 640s.
Yeah. I mean, in this market in Android, this Moto G is what replaces that. And honestly, this is a much higher quality device than like a Lumia 520 or the 635 you were just talking about. Those are plastic. The cameras were terrible.
Sure.
But they were expandable and Windows Phone OS was fairly lightweight, so it could kind of handle that. But this offers access to the Android ecosystem, and it's from a build quality perspective, it's actually a much better device than any of those low-end Lumias.
Very interesting. I do want to talk to you about, I want to revisit our conversation from last week about the Microsoft event that's coming up. I do want to talk about that, but before we do, let's take a moment to talk about our sponsor, and that's FreshBooks. For a 30-day free trial, go to freshbooks.com/WTT. Enter What the Tech in the How You Heard About Us section. FreshBooks is a cloud accounting software. I have an example right here. Small business account software that makes billing painless. I do invoicing almost every single day, and I have to tell you, collecting money is very difficult, especially when people don't want to pay you. You have to constantly hound them with reminders and keep track of who you invoice and who you didn't invoice. You need to know how you're accepting. Sometimes they want to pay you with one type of payment method. The other time they want to pay you with another. FreshBooks makes it super easy. You don't have to chase down clients for checks or waste time in line at the bank. You let your clients pay online and you get paid up up to 11 days faster, which is amazing. They do Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and Apple Pay. They can pay just with one click. It makes it super easy. Also, when you do an invoicing, they have you think about it as like autopilot, right? You could set the reminder, you could set a late charge fee, charge a late fee, you could do currency language changes, exchange. It does everything. It's so easy, and it goes directly into your account. So you could also say how much of it goes where, how you want to put it back in your account. FreshBooks is an unbelievable company. They've been my accounting software since 2011. Or 12, one of those, for a couple of years now. And it has made my life so easy. I have used PayPal in the past, and I started doing PayPal because I got a little lazy, and then I forgot how great FreshBooks was. So I actually went back because I realized how terrible it was to collect money with PayPal. FreshBooks makes your life super easy. If you collect money, if you're a freelancer, if you're a small business owner, a larger business owner, or you just need to keep track of bills, I really highly recommend FreshBooks. Go to FreshBooks.com/WTT. Get a free 30-day trial. I highly recommend you try this out and you see if you like it. Seriously, Paul, this is really one of those companies that I pride on advertising because I use it every day and they're great people. Free 30-day trial. Go to FreshBooks.com/WTT. Enter What the Tech in the How You Heard About Us section. Paul, anything new from last week about this Microsoft event in New York? It is not a Surface event, right? It is not a Surface device.
Well, it doesn't mean there can't be a Surface device at the event. But if there is, it's going to be some kind of a weird cloud booky kind of thing and not a Surface Pro whatever and not a Surface Book whatever. So that's kind of interesting, right? So my theory now is that with the education bent, that I think we're still going to see a Surface event or at least a Surface announcement that will be at least a pro refresh of some kind that's separate from that event, and that for the event itself it would make sense for Microsoft to come out with partners who are going to offer some of these Windows 10 cloud based devices and possibly some mixed reality headset stuff, which I still think makes plenty of sense in an educational environment. So all we can do is speculate. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see what this cloud-based, you know, like this cloud Surface Book could possibly be, because this is a potential, you know, Google Chromebook competitor, which it probably will be a Google Chromebook in general, Chromebook competitor. And, you know, the appealing thing about Chromebooks is that they're cheap and they're light, and a lot of them are attractive laptops. It doesn't look like you're buying a crappy little laptop. They're cute, you know, they're decent looking for most people. The fact that you can't really run Android apps on a lot of them is a problem. I'm still waiting on my Asus. I was promised, you know, Q3 of 2016, still don't have Android app capability, app Play Store. What are they called? What are they called now? Jeez, my brain's not working. What is our app store called? The Play Store.
Which one?
There you go.
The Google Play Store.
Yeah, the Google Play Store. You don't have access to the Google Play Store on this. What?
I thought that is what you said. No.
I called it the Google Marketplace.
Oh, right. Oh, that thing.
Yeah, the Google Marketplace app store, that thing.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't have access to it, and it would really make the experience a whole lot better. So if Microsoft could kind of capitalize on, like, hey, look at all these apps that we got in our store that you could download on this, I don't think that's going to happen. But if they could do that, it potentially, you know, could be appealing for $199 for people to get.
Right.
Right. I mean, would that be the price point on this thing that they gotta stay?
Yeah, that has to be the starting price point. I mean, I the education market is so different, and I think this is going to be a big part of this event. And so, if you think back to the Creators Update event that they had back in October, in fact, you should go. Don't do this right now. But if you go back and watch it, just watch like the first minute. It starts off on the weirdest vibe. It's not like any Microsoft event before it, and it's because they're talking about all this creator baloney that never turned into anything. But, I think the education thing is going to be like that too. They're going to come out and start talking about education. Everyone's going to be like, what are they talking about? But there's this whole world out there of what are basically enterprises that have no money, you know, that still need to buy technology in bulk. They have very specific needs where they have labs where they have to wipe computers out very quickly and prepare them for the next class. They have shared computing resources that don't involve just computers like in those labs, but also possibly like peripherals, like those mixed reality headsets. And so they have very specific needs, but job one in this market is not spending any money. And so Microsoft is competing with a platform that has usurped it in education in the United States only. Still a very important market though, and you don't want to see that happen elsewhere. And so I think going after Google and Chromebooks in education makes tons of sense. Chromebooks have very obvious pros and cons, right? They're very easy to use. People understand them. They're easy to manage, which is great for the schools because those types of environments often don't have dedicated IT staff, especially in lower education. But they're also really limited, right? Which is, I think, why we're seeing Android happen on that platform. But that's an area where Windows or Microsoft could exploit because, you know, Windows has a functional advantage.
They do have a functional advantage, but if they can't install, if they don't have the apps and they can't install it, then where's the advantage? You know, I guess that's the, that would be, to me, the reason why I think they're going after education is because they don't have the apps. And if they have the apps, then they could target, you know, they can market this towards everybody, right? It's going to be education, but this is going to be, I guarantee you, by Christmas, every manufacturer is going to make one of these things, and they're going to be $149, $199, $219, and people are going to buy them.
Windows 10 Cloud is not just aimed at education. It's just that this is an education event. And it makes sense for them to announce it at this event. So remember, there are going to be executive Ultrabooks that run this operating system and are very expensive, you know. I had some speculation around web apps, which is based on evidence and so forth. But I think that the cloud name is actually based on the fact that Microsoft is going to allow progressive web apps into the Windows Store, and that progressive web apps make much more sense for any kind of enterprise, but also education specifically, because that's where the next generation of app development is occurring. It's on the web. And if these things are uniquely, well, see, they aren't uniquely because of Chromebook, but let's say specially tailored to run web apps, it's not an advantage of a Chromebook, but they're checking off a box like we do this too, you know? And I think that's going to be a big, big part of it. I think we're going to learn more about that at Build. I mean, there's a lot of things happening in the near future, but
there's a tremendous amount of things happening.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a giant mess.
We're going to find out. I'm excited about that event in 2 weeks. Not next week. I keep thinking it's next week. It's in 2 weeks.
I know. I'm so screwed up. I'm so glad it's not next week.
You know what? Me too. I'm actually very glad it's not next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I'm curious. I'm really curious as to what this device is going to be like, if they're going to partner up and how they're going to partner up and the end goal with this. Because it could be done pretty well and it could be done really wrong, right? We saw what happened with Windows RT and didn't end well.
I mean, the problem with Windows 10 Cloud is that we've heard only part of the story. And so when you evaluate the part of the story we've heard, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And we're missing something, you know, because
I hope so.
The people at Microsoft that work on this stuff are not idiots. You know, they're just not. And they are not going to release something that doesn't make sense. They're just not. And you know, we can evaluate it and agree or disagree or whatever, but there has to be some sense to what it is they're doing. And so, like I said, we just haven't heard the full story. And so it's very easy to say Windows RT was stupid. This thing is Windows RT. This thing is stupid. But let's wait until a week from Tuesday. And if that's true, we will say that it is stupid. But until then, let's just see what happens.
Let's just wait and see what happens. Paul, this was a lot of fun. Sir. As always, do you have a meeting today at 3 o'clock?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, you do. Guys, we're going to be back with the bonus shows. I believe next week we'll be able
I'll
to
be home
do
next
some
week,
more.
By the way. Okay. So,
yeah. So next week we're going to be back with the bonus shows.
Yeah,
because it's insanity here right now, and I'm getting high off the fumes as they're staining and they're putting polyurethane on my stairs. Mm-hmm. I'm getting really loopy right now.
Yeah, because you're right around the corner from that.
It's like right here. Like I could put my arm there and starting to get bad. So I'm going to go, and Paul's going to go. Guys, go to the website, gfknetwork.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at Andrew Zarin. You can follow Paul at The Rot. Go to therot.com, all things Paul. Sign up for your premium package. Also, you could fund us if you like to. You go to patreon.com/whatthetech. Fund the show there. If you're buying something on Amazon, use our link, gfq.co/Amazon. Bookmark it. Whenever you make a purchase, we get a small little credit from it. We'll see you all next time, guys. Take care.